So, if you look over in the corner of your living room right now, or maybe, I don't know, up on a shelf in your home office, there's probably a little plastic box with a row of green blinking lights, your internet router.
Oh, yeah, everybody has one.
Right. And most of us never think about it unless the Wi-Fi drops. We just sort of assume it's this path to dumb pipe bringing Netflix and emails into our house. But what if silently in the background, that hardware had been drafted into a global state-sponsored cyber army? Today, we are looking at an event of just staggering scale. We're diving into an August 2026 investigative dossier from Tekken Game Media detailing one of the most comprehensive counter-cyber operations in, well, in modern intelligence
Geez,
history.
really is.
Yeah, so our mission today is to deconstruct this dossier to figure out exactly how this invisible army was built, how it fundamentally bypassed traditional security perimeters, and, how a single architectural vulnerability brought the whole thing down.
And the scope of the operation detailed in the dossier is genuinely breathtaking. We're analyzing a joint takedown by the FBI, the NSA, the Department of Justice, and the Cyber National Mission Force.
Wow.
Yeah, together they systematically dismantled a Chinese state-sponsored cyber espionage network known as QTFFY, also tracked in threat intelligence circles as QTCYBER, or the QT Group.
Okay, let's unpack this because the sheer scale we are talking about is hard to wrap your head around. I mean, we always hear about hackers in basements, maybe wearing hoodies, typing frantically in the dark.
Right, the classic movie trope.
Exactly. But this sounds like an industrialized global military operation hiding literally inside our living rooms. How did our own home internet routers become weapons in a global cyber war?
Well, to understand the mechanics of the attack, we first have to understand the modern architecture of the adversary. The classical idea of a military hacker sitting in a government intelligence building is completely outdated.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Today's advanced persistent threats, or APTs, they operate identically to modern tech startups. In this case, QTFY was hiding behind a corporate front, the Nanjing Xinjiang Network Technology Company.
Wait, so an actual registered corporation, like with
Yeah.
an HR department, payroll, and a marketing team?
Yep. On paper and to the public, Nanjing Xinjiang was a highly regarded cybersecurity firm. They actively marketed penetration testing and, defensive network consulting. They recruited specialized vulnerability researchers and systems engineers straight out of top universities, competing for talent just like any Silicon Valley firm. But internally, underneath that legitimate corporate structure, they operated as an offensive exploitation contractor for China's Ministry of State Security, the MSS, and the People's Liberation Army.
That is wild. It's like a legitimate, fully licensed locksmith company running a sophisticated, industrialized bank robbery syndicate on the weekends.
That's a great way to put it, yeah.
But why set it up this way? I mean, the PLA has massive resources. Why not just have the military run these operations directly from their own infrastructure?
It's all about plausible deniability and infrastructure blending.
Okay.
By utilizing a commercial tech enterprise, the state intelligence apparatus puts a critical layer of insulation between themselves and the attack. I mean, a commercial entity can easily procure commercial cloud hosting, spin up legitimate residential proxy services, and lease server space on AWS or Google Cloud without triggering espionage alerts.
Right, because they just look like a normal business.
Exactly. To the outside world, the offensive traffic just looks like benign encrypted enterprise data. FBI Director Christopher Wray was actually quoted in the dossier regarding this specific tactic. He stated that the court-authorized disruption of QTFY demonstrates that commercial foreign companies operating as mercenary arms for hostile state intelligence services will be systematically identified and dismantled.
Okay, but I have to push back on that a little. If these APTs are hiding behind legitimate corporate tax IDs, recruiting talent off LinkedIn, and meticulously blending their attacks into everyday enterprise cloud traffic, doesn't that make traditional military cyber defense almost impossible?
It makes it incredibly difficult, yeah.
I mean, how do you defend your perimeter against an enemy that looks exactly like your own citizens browsing the web?
Well, you've just hit on the exact reason QTFY was so devastatingly effective for so long. It renders traditional perimeter defense completely obsolete.
Wow.
If you are only looking for suspicious foreign IP addresses, you are going to miss the attack entirely. And to understand how QTFY achieved this unprecedented camouflage, we really need to look at the two custom software platforms they engineered to execute the campaign. That's Qscan and Qtrouder.
The arsenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dossier breaks these down into two very distinct tools working in perfect synchronization. So let's look at Qscan first, which essentially functions as the hunter, right?
Right. Q-Scan is an automated mass reconnaissance engine. The dossier notes it was executing continuous asynchronous port sweeps across global IPv4 and IPv6 address ranges.
And asynchronous meaning what exactly?
So unlike a traditional scanner that checks one IP address, waits for a response, and then moves to the next, an asynchronous scanner fires off thousands of requests simultaneously and just processes the responses as they trickle in. Hmm. It was specifically hunting for outdated firmware, unpatched web interfaces, and default passwords on edge routers, IP surveillance cameras, and network-attached storage devices.
And we are not talking about a slow manual search here. The forensic analysis in the source says this automated scanning engine was evaluating over 500,000 concurrent network endpoints per minute.
Yeah, 500,000.
500,000 devices checked for weaknesses every 60 seconds. That is a terrifying level of automation.
It really is. And once Q-Scan identified a vulnerable device, say, an IP camera in a coffee shop in Ohio that hadn't received a security patch in 3 years, it autonomously weaponized it. It leveraged known zero-day exploits or basic credential spraying to inject a highly specialized lightweight agent directly into the device's RAM.
And that brings us to the second piece of software, QTrouder, the cloak.
Exactly.
So QScan finds the vulnerable device and breaks in, and then QTrouder immediately takes over to build the camouflage network. The dossier calls this an operational relay box, or ORB, mesh. Visually, it's like a digital parasitic vine. It wraps around an innocent smart baby monitor and uses it to tunnel directly into highly secure federal networks.
And the mechanics of that tunnel are what made it so stealthy.
Yeah.
The dossier breaks this down into a four-stage exploitation lifecycle. Phase one is that global reconnaissance sweep. Phase two is the volatile payload injection into the device's RAM. Phase three is the ORB relay integration. This is crucial. So the infected baby monitor establishes an encrypted reverse tunnel back to QTrouder intermediary proxy nodes. Because the connection is initiated outbound from inside the home network, it punches right through standard NAT firewalls, which typically only block incoming connections.
Oh, sneaky.
Scary. And finally, phase four is the C2 exfiltration relay. They funnel the stolen data through those benign residential nodes back to the central servers in Nanjing.
Wait, let me stop you at phase two. They inject this malware into the device's RAM. Now, we know RAM is volatile, like it requires constant power to maintain data.
Right, yeah.
Does that mean if I just unplug my infected router, wait 10 seconds, and plug it back in, I theoretically kill the infection?
Mechanically, yes. A power cycle clears the RAM, and the specific infection residing on that device at that exact moment is wiped completely clean.
Okay, but...
But here is the architectural brilliance of the system. Because QScan is evaluating 500,000 endpoints every single minute, the moment your router boots back up, negotiates a connection with your ISP, and comes back online, it is almost immediately found by the asynchronous scanner, re-exploited, and reinfected.
Oh, wow. So you power cycle the hardware and it's reassimilated into the botnet before you even finish brewing your coffee.
Pretty much. The vulnerability in the firmware remains, so the door is always unlocked.
Jeez.
What's fascinating here is how this architecture completely blinded traditional security operations centers. Imagine you were a senior security analyst monitoring ingress traffic for a federal government network. You see an anomaly, but the traffic isn't originating from an IP address block registered in Beijing. It's coming from a Comcast subscriber in Ohio or an AT&T fiber connection in Texas.
Which means if you block the IP address of the router in Ohio, the QT router mesh just dynamically shifts the traffic load to a compromised smart fridge in London. You are literally playing whack-a-mole with consumer appliances.
Exactly. The dossier includes a brilliant quote from the Cybersecurity Directorate at the NSA describing this exact phenomenon. They stated that QScan and QTrouder represent industrial-grade cyber espionage capabilities engineered to transform ubiquitous consumer IoT hardware into disposable operational camouflage.
Disposable operational camouflage.
Right. The syndicate maintained an ever-replenishing pool of hundreds of thousands of active relay nodes. Single IP blacklisting was completely mathematically useless.
Okay, so they engineered this incredible self-replenishing camouflage network that renders standard defenses useless. That naturally leads us to look at the target list, because you don't build a weapon like this just to deface websites. The dossier details infiltration into NASA and the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, the strategic breadth of their targeting indicates a highly coordinated intelligence objective. They were systematically going after the highest echelons of U.S. technological and economic power. At NASA, the threat actors were hunting for proprietary aerospace engineering schematics, highly classified satellite telemetry protocols, and deep space propulsion research data.
Now, I get why a rival nation wants NASA's deep space rocket blueprints.
Yeah.
That is classic, cut and dry intellectual property theft. You steal the telemetry protocols, you save your own aerospace sector a decade of research and development costs.
That's only.
But the Federal Reserve, the dossier notes they were establishing deep network backdoors to monitor confidential macroeconomic modeling and internal policy deliberations. Why the Federal Reserve are they trying to actively front run the U.S. economy?
Well, in a globally interconnected economy, possessing asymmetrical information about the U.S. central bank is incredibly potent.
Yes, so, yeah.
If a foreign intelligence service has access to the confidential models predicting U.S. inflation rates or the internal unreleased deliberations regarding upcoming interest rate hikes, they can dynamically adjust their own state's fiscal policy. They can manipulate trade negotiations, preemptively alter currency valuations, or dump specific sovereign bonds before a market shift. It's not about stealing funds from a vault. It's about stealing the macroeconomic roadmap of your primary geopolitical rival.
Man. And their reach extended way beyond NASA and the Fed, too. The dossier mentions deep infiltrations into Department of Energy National Laboratory's supercomputing facilities, regional electrical grid distribution SCADA networks, specialized hospital clinical systems, and even Tier 1 telecommunications routing backbones. It basically feels like a blanket intelligence gathering operation.
Yeah, to truly contextualize the threat landscape, the dossier provides a comparative matrix of Chinese state-sponsored APTs operating in 2026. QTFY, the network we are analyzing, was heavily focused on federal and aerospace espionage.
Yeah.
But the dossier also outlines Volt Typhoon, which utilizes living off the land techniques.
Living off the land.
Yeah. So instead of deploying detectable malware, Volt Typhoon compromises native sysadmin tools to pre-position themselves within critical utilities like water treatment plants and maritime ports for future kinetic sabotage.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then there is Salt Typhoon, which focuses purely on telecommunications interception, tapping optical lines and exploiting core Cisco routers to monitor communications.
So they have highly specialized, distinct divisions for different strategic missions. QTFY is gathering intelligence and stealing data. Volt Typhoon is sneaking in and planting digital explosives in case a kinetic war breaks out. And Salt Typhoon is wiretapping the infrastructure. That is a massive, multi-pronged apparatus.
Right. They operate as highly specialized, parallel military campaigns. But for QTFY, the intelligence gathering mission encountered a catastrophic structural failure.
The takedown. Because single IP blacklisting failed so spectacularly here, federal investigators had to find another way to kill a monster with millions of heads. They had to find a structural weakness in the architecture itself.
And despite all the sophisticated camouflage, QTFY had a critical flaw embedded directly into their malware binaries, which was hard-coded command and control, or C2, domains.
Wait, if the domains were hard-coded into the binaries, that means the malware wasn't dynamically hunting for its master. It was essentially on a digital leash tied to a static, unchangeable address. If the infected router always has to ping maliciousserver.com to get its daily marching orders, that's a massive centralized vulnerability.
It is the ultimate single point of failure. The engineering decision to use hard-coded, fully qualified domain names rather than dynamically generated ones might have been for operational stability or legacy code reasons, but it ultimately doomed the network. Because those domains were statically compiled into the QScan and QTrouter agents, the entire botnet had to resolve those specific addresses to function.
So instead of fighting a losing battle against millions of infected edge routers, the Department of Justice bypassed the camouflage entirely and went after the domain names themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The dossier outlines that federal prosecutors secured court-authorized warrants to legally seize authoritative control of those specific C2 domains.
And this is where the sheer brilliance of the counteroperation becomes apparent. By seizing authoritative control of the domains at the registry level, the U.S. government executed a maneuver called DNS syncholing.
DNS syncholing.
Right, so when millions of infected routers queried the domain name system to find the IP address for their master server, the seized registry didn't send them to Nanjing. It seamlessly rerouted all that malicious telemetry to heavily secured, classified research nodes controlled by the FBI and the NSA.
So it's basically a digital sting operation on a global scale. The FBI essentially went to the post office, filed a change of address form for the entire hacking syndicate, and suddenly the massive flood of stolen data, the check-ins from the botnet, and the exfiltration relays were being delivered directly to federal investigators.
Yeah, and the logistical coordination required to absorb that immediate influx of traffic is staggering. The effect on the QTFY operators in Nanjing was instantaneous and absolute. They were instantly deafened and blinded.
Wow.
They lost all telemetry, all data exfiltration, and all command capability over their global botnet armies in a matter of seconds. The Cybernational Mission Force Special Operations Directorate summarized the strike perfectly in the dossier, stating they severed the central nervous system of a global espionage apparatus in a single synchronized strike.
Man, it's an incredible tactical victory, but it does raise a major operational question. The change of address form means the botnet is talking to the NSA now. But what happens to the millions of infected routers still sitting in people's living rooms? The malware is still injected into the RAM, right?
Yeah.
Are they just orphaned, continually shouting into a federal void?
Basically, yeah. The malware remains active until the device is power cycled, yes. But it is effectively neutralized. It's trapped in a holding pattern. However, as the dossier emphasizes, rerouting that telemetry gave U.S. intelligence something invaluable, which is the real-time IP addresses of every compromised device.
Oh, right.
This allowed the FBI and NSA to coordinate proactive victim remediation across commercial and governmental sectors, alerting ISPs to notify specific customers that their hardware required immediate patching or complete replacement. Which brings us to the reality check for enterprise defense. If I'm a network engineer or a CISO listening to this, I mean, this has to be a terrifying read. The report explicitly labels this an urgent operational wake-up call. Organizations spend millions securing their core data servers, but this proves that edge networking devices and consumer IoT hardware are the ultimate soft underbelly.
Oh, absolutely. Organizations have historically neglected the patch life cycles of their edge router firmware. The dossier is brutally clear on this point. Organizations that neglect edge hardware maintenance inadvertently serve as unwitting staging grounds for nation-state cyber warfare.
So your unpatched lobby thermostat becomes the staging ground for an attack on the Federal Reserve.
Exactly. The technical advisory section strongly recommends adopting strict zero-trust architecture, or ZTA. They outline actionable engineering steps like automated hardware inventory management, mandating the disablement of public remote WAN management interfaces, implementing micro-segmentation, and establishing continuous egress traffic anomaly monitoring.
That's a lot of changes.
It is, but those architectural shifts are no longer optional. Take micro-segmentation, for example. When implemented correctly, it establishes cryptographic boundaries between different subnets. It ensures that even if that smart thermostat in your corporate lobby is compromised by an ORB mesh, it is physically and cryptographically isolated.
Right. Yeah.
It cannot initiate lateral movement to communicate with your production data servers or your HR databases. If we connect this to the bigger picture, modern cyber defense requires completely abandoning the assumption of a static, impenetrable perimeter. The perimeter is fundamentally dead.
But the dossier doesn't stop at patching routers and segmenting networks. It looks at the horizon of this conflict. And this is where the implications get truly alarming. Because the attackers aren't going to simply give up just because their hard-coded domains were seized, right? They learn. The dossier predicts that future threat networks will discard static C2 topologies entirely. They are moving towards self-healing, peer-to-peer, decentralized neural meshes generated by autonomous artificial intelligence.
Yeah. Hard-coded domains were their Achilles heel, so the next iteration of Qt Router simply won't have them. As threat actors integrate advanced AI models into zero-day discovery and polymorphic payload generation.
Polymorphic payload generation.
Yeah, meaning malware that autonomously rewrites its own code signature in real time to evade heuristic detection. The entire nature of the battlefield shifts from human-driven to machine-driven.
But wait, if I'm a regular IT professional, if these advanced threat actors are moving to polymorphic payloads that constantly change shape and self-healing AI neural meshes that don't rely on centralized servers, how is a standard enterprise IT department supposed to fight an autonomous AI swarm? Standard antivirus definitions are utterly useless against code that rewrites itself every 3 seconds.
They are completely useless. And that's why the dossier emphasizes that enterprise defense must fundamentally evolve. Defending critical infrastructure demands transitioning away from reactive post-incident remediation. We have to move toward continuous, proactive threat hunting and cross-sector telemetry sharing. As the dossier bluntly states, the future of cyber warfare belongs solely to defenders capable of automating deterrence at the exact speed of incoming algorithms.
Wow. So what does this all mean? If we zoom out and look at the scorecard from Taken Game Media, they rate this operation a 9.7 out of 10, a massive strategic defense triumph, complete operational neutralization of China's largest automated IoT proxy relay network. They say it effectively destroyed years of meticulous infrastructure cultivation and tens of millions of dollars in automated tooling development. It's a huge win today.
It is a monumental tactical victory. But, you know, the cons section of that scorecard provides a sobering reality check. The threat actors operated completely undetected across select federal data architectures for several years prior to the disruption. And the adversaries are fully expected to rebuild, utilizing those decentralized AI-driven routing nodes we just discussed. The arms race of algorithms is just beginning.
Which leaves me with a chilling final thought. We've been talking about fighting algorithms with algorithms. But if these polymorphic payloads and self-healing AI meshes can autonomously rewrite themselves to bypass any software firewall, that fundamentally shifts the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
If software itself can no longer be trusted to defend against an AI swarm, it seems the only impenetrable defense would have to be hardware-enforced cryptographic boundaries, security physically baked into the silicon layer itself. And if the future of cyber warfare against AI absolutely requires security to be baked into the physical silicon of our chips, does that mean every single piece of hardware we currently own, every enterprise server, every corporate firewall, and that little blinking plastic box sitting in your living room right now is already functionally obsolete for tomorrow's cyber wars?
That is the big question. It raises an incredibly important point about the longevity of our current infrastructure. It strongly suggests that achieving true digital sovereignty in the near future might require replacing the foundational hardware of the entire internet.
And until that hardware revolution happens, the front lines of this global conflict will continue to run straight through our living rooms. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the QTFY takedown. Take a moment today to check for firmware updates on your router, and we'll catch you on the next one.